and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, this is Mark Marble.
I'm Chad Bokelman.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 598.
Green Lantern Dark Time again.
Yeah, marching ever closer. I will say, look, just before, as a preface, before we even get into this thing, I do very much still like this series, but the pacing in terms of the spacing between issues and everything, it's just, I can tell already I'm going to like this so much more in trade paperback than I'm accepting it in single issues here.
Yeah, I mean, I even though, again, we have like three more, which is going to take forever. We have three more issues to get through, since I believe this is only a seven-issue series. But this is a perfect example of something that they never should have released this as a monthly, bi-monthly book. They should have just released this as a trade. I've read right off the bat, because again, at some point we'll discuss what has created the trade market really, versus, because some people clearly just buy trades and you don't buy monthly books anymore. But certainly this whole release schedule thing, I think the story by itself is dragging, but it obviously, that feeling is multiplied by the fact that we have to wait 2 months to get an issue in the story. So I'm starting to definitely lose my interest in the story. It hasn't lost me. When you read the stories, it's like, okay, they're still somewhat interesting. But if they announce tomorrow that, hey, this book is kaput, we're never getting issue 5, I wouldn't be losing sleep over it.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I will say, it's just, I'm losing track of the, not even necessarily the characters, just the internal logic of the series, and some of the development and backpedaling, I think, that Rainey does sometimes. Because, like, last issue, like, she really found her will, but then this issue, and we'll get into it, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought as a pre-postmortem, I thought the way she was acting in the beginning of the book was annoying, and I thought this was... been there, done that. We've already seen this for like three more issues. And like we talked about in previous reviews of the series, that at some point you got to, you know what, and get off the pot when it comes to the reluctant hero. And it's like, okay, we're more than halfway through the story. It's like pull your shit together and move on and do what you got to do and stop swimming against the tide. And I think even in this issue, it kind of was falling into the same tropes, but. All right, Chad, let's take us home with this, Chad.
Yeah, to the best of my ability, guys, this one, I will say, it's a more wordy issue than the ones we've gotten previously, so I'll do the best of my ability here. So we open up basically with the logic behind the town that Damona is running, which is essentially, I don't know if it's supposed to be a town or a kingdom or a prefecture or what, but essentially just this area that she's in, it's called Providence. And basically everybody in this world who's had shit happen to them and have just, you know, the endless grief and agony and fear and so on and so forth that you're experienced, you go to a place. What if I told you there was a place that took all your pain and gave it a higher purpose? And it's, I don't know, in-story propaganda for Providence and what Damona has going on. So I don't know. It's a place where you trade your pain and suffering for a little bit of bright light every now and then, and a reminder of what the world used to be, and gladly give your pain to Damona. Anyways, we cut into Demona here, and she said, and she sings, "As scrummy as a rotten peach, thank you, sweet boy. You have my word, not a hair nor a thread." And Grundy, who's over in a pot regrowing himself, says, "Is she? Are you talking to me?" Which she is not. She calls him Pooh. Whatever. She says, "The Green Lanterns have got to get a little taste of what I have to offer." So we cut over to Green Lantern, who is having a conversation with Bat Wraith and just basically saying, "We're not putting together a traveling circus, and let's get out of here. And we're not picking up freaks along the way. Piss off, Ghost." to quote what's his name from Thor. she goes back to Lunette, and the guy who she freed from the monster form previous issue, and she's calling him Gar because that's the only thing he said. And she says, "Well, we can't leave him behind. You said we'd help him." And then they talk about Lunette's brother comes out and says, "Hey, we can restock on food here. My mom said once in that there's some salted cod." And Rini says, "Okay, well, yeah, I've been there. I know the place. We'll head there." So they head there to Port Harbor or Arbor, and the population is missing. Everybody's gone. Rini said she was just here 3 weeks ago. I don't understand why people would vanish. And then she sees off in the distance what looks like two kids, which gets Gar, the monster's attention. He transforms back into a monster to go, you know, protect those kids, essentially. She jumps in front of him and says, "Stop." And then she realizes that these ghostly apparitions, creepy children, and she sees one that's a girl with black hair and the other that's a boy. And both of them stop in their, Rini and Gar, stop in their tracks and each say, "Is that me?" So they're basically seeing kid versions of themselves in front of them. And they reach out and touch them and they freeze. To Lunette and her brother, they're motionless. They're not doing anything. Nothing is happening to them. They don't see anything wrong with them. They are just standing there utterly frozen. Meanwhile, inside of their head, we're getting horrific flashbacks of bad times in the childhood of both of these kids. It looks like maybe the night Rini found the lantern or the lantern found her. We see Gar on the other side of the crater where in the woods this green light had crashed. And he's saying, "Is this your story? You're so afraid. I can feel it." And she says, "Yeah." And he tells her to touch it, the light in front of her. And then Gar is experiencing his own thing where it looks like, and we can elaborate even more later on, but this has got to be one of the obsidian seeds, like the actual seeds, right?
Probably. That's what I guess I would take from it.
Yeah. So in a sort of parallel event that happened in Gar's life, something came crashing down and it was a obsidian seed. And Gar's friends or family or whomever is, you know, daring him to touch it, which makes him what he was. And she's touching the light, which is supposed to make her what she is, which, by the way, in her light, you do see a Green Lantern. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be the Green Lantern that we know from the Tangent Universe, just like a shade of her, just sort of a shadow of her, an outline of her sitting in the energy, or if she's seeing what she'll become. Like, it's unclear if it's a vision or an actual person. They touch it, they become what they are. The kids are trying to get their attention, and that's when Bat Wraith shows up and just basically says that there's some dread, what is known as dread leeches, and he, you know, uses his abilities to show. And it's basically these big fat feeding things latched onto the top of their heads that are just sort of feeding on misery and agony and trauma and everything. And he basically says the only way to kill them is to overload them. So he dissipates or jumps into their psyche, and he says, you know, you need to get over this. Don't delay. I've lived my undeath for over a millennium, child. I have lost and lost and only lost. And he says, thine enemies will gladly wield thy pain against you, so you must wield it first. Feel it all, and feel it big. And both Rina and Gar hear this. And the dread leeches on both Gar and Rina pop and explode. And Gar speaks for the first time. He says, "You saw me." And she gives Lunette a hug. And the brother still is being very standoffish. And then she says, "Reveal," uses her magic to show the leeches all around. And then with a snap of her finger, just burns them all. And then as they're camping out for the night and Gar is standing watch over the fire, we see Lunette's brother in the tent alongside her saying, in his mind, saying, "I did what you asked, but it didn't work. I didn't know about the ghost. It's not fair. You promised to get rid of all the monsters, but there are more and more every day while us humans suffer. I'm sorry. I'm so." And she says, "Let it out, sweet scrummy, sweet boy. So scrummy. Let it all out. You can still make it up to dear Nimona." So he has been the person she has been whispering to for a little bit now. So that's why we saw her sort of mid conversation when we saw her at the beginning of the issue. And he's the one who told him to go to this town because Nimona clearly told him. To be continued. And Port Arbor is now checked off on our game progress map with a lantern of its own.
Yep. Slowly but surely.
Yeah.
I guess depending on one's perspective, the fact that we have a built-in explanation in the story for why her brother is such an asshole. I don't know if that necessarily excuses him for being such an asshole, but at least...
Well, it doesn't excuse him for the first issue, because she had to have made contact after Green Lantern came onto her radar.
I guess, but either way, it doesn't... I mean, I don't... My guess, ultimately, where I was going with it was I don't think it changes that much about this, about our feelings about him. I mean, it only would if she was somehow... If maybe she was influencing him, but it was one of those things where they had to literally move on the map and get closer for her to have more influence on him. Kind of like how Parallax was influencing some retconned Hal through the central power battery before he became his host, just because of reaching out through the battery. I don't know. Either way, the brother's still unlikable. So that's I don't think that's going to change. I don't think even if we get some pseudo redemption arc for this kid by issue 7, I don't think it matters that much to me. Anyway, yeah, like I mentioned before you started the review, Rena kind of goes back and forth again. She starts off in seems like almost every issue she starts off in the same damn place when it comes to her attitude and what she doesn't want to do and everything else. Now let's see if the next issue if the next issue is a little different now that we have Bat Wraith along for the ride, and which I don't know if we really needed that anyway. We need another Batman all throughout the story. It was okay. I think there were some interesting things in this, at least with, you know, some of the visions we were getting with the leeches and things. But overall, I didn't like this issue all that much. I thought it was probably, if it wasn't the weakest, it was close to the weakest of the other three issues, as weak as the other three, if it wasn't weaker. So I don't know. But again, objectively speaking, I think it might be because, like I've said, my interest in the story has waned quite a bit. And it's more like just trying to get it to the finish line.
I thought artistically this one really stood out, this issue, particularly color-wise. When we get to the visions and Gar transforms into the monster and he's more purpley. So just the juxtaposition of Rini's green and Gar's purple narrative and everything. Color-wise, especially when her story starts off in this very black and white sort of thing with her being, I don't know, a little goth kid or whatever. And then everything else is just on fire and green. And then the obsidian seed spitting out all this purple energy and the double page splash that we get of them kind of overloading the leeches. And I just like there wasn't necessarily a big threat in terms of a big monster to fight down like Grundy or what Gar was in the previous issue or whatever, but, you know, the monsters within this time. So, that's interesting. I just, like we said, we keep getting these moments where Rini is like, "I don't know what we're doing. I know what we're not doing, and we're not going to pick up a pack of traveling freaks along the way and just a little hodgepodge team on our way to Mordor." You know, that kind of shit. But like, then also it takes her a little bit. I don't understand why she's just not getting a hold of her powers better. Like, she clearly is in a way. It's almost like she keeps learning the lesson that she is competent with the powers and forgetting between issues and learning it again, because there's not a lot of power usage or anything of importance here. And then all of a sudden, after she breaks free of the leash, she's like, oh, you pissed her off. And all of a sudden, with a snap of her hand, she's like, reveal, burn, done. Okay. I guess that's why Port Arbor is lit up as saving the town, because she burned all the leeches that took over the town with the snap of her hand. Why does she keep forgetting how powerful she is? Why can't she hold on to this? I don't know. I get we've got a lot to learn about this world, but I really want to know more about why it is she can't hold on to these lessons she's learning about herself. With anything else, and I hate to get too philosophical here, but like the moments in your life where you learn really hard lessons, it's almost like someone throws a switch in your head. But anyway, moving on.
Maybe we'll get an in-story explanation. Maybe there will be something that that Damona is doing, which somehow is interfering with Green Lantern, part of how she's playing a more subtle head game or something. Her influence, maybe that can has an effect on why. I don't think, I'm just being glass half full here, that maybe that's why Rena has these regressions in almost every issue and back, and she two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. I'm not really sure. I agree with you about the colors. And just like it was funny, because you mentioned that on some levels, this issue was very wordy, and it is, but there's also tons of pages in the story in which there's barely any words at all. So because we get a lot of splash pages, we have a bunch of pages where there's only like very little dialogue on them. But I do like the colors. The art style, I think, to me, is starting to wear a little thin with me at times. I think it still works in some. Like Gar looks cool in his monster form, and it doesn't bother me when Rena's in it. But she's got the cloak on, or even sometimes when the cloak is not on, and it works good for Batwraith. But there are too many panels where the awkwardness in the art style just doesn't really work that well for me. Even like the last page is not the best example with Damona and the brother, but there's lots of examples, and especially of the two kids, that I think I don't think the art style works for me, especially when you have some of those panels where there's not a lot of where the detail is kicked down a notch, and then that weird kind of angled art style doesn't seem to work as well for me.
Otherwise, I think that's it. I don't have much else to say about this. That's kind of all there is.
No, I would agree with this. I think it is disappointing. This book clearly would have read much, or would read, but I'll say read because I think the train, you know, the train's out of this, has left the station at this point. This book clearly would have read better, and I think it would have sold better, would sell better, however one prefers, if it was monthly. The fact that you have a lot of, the fact that this is, you have to remember the characters, you have to remember the names. Even if you don't remember the names, you have to remember the backstories and where they're coming from. And not just what happened in the last issue, but what happened in the previous issues. So we only have, coming into this one, we had three issues like spread out over like 6 months or so. It's not a great way of storytelling. So again, I think you would have had more interest in this book, and it would almost assuredly would have read better if it was just released as a graphic novel, a 7-issue size graphic novel, and not just wait, oh, we'll put it in trade when it's done. It's like, yeah. And you have some people who only read trades that'll buy it, but you're not, I don't. And you'll have some completists who want to buy a trade of it, even though they have the individual issues. But I can't see the story motivating a whole lot of people based on story alone to want to go buy the trade version of it. That's the problem with monthly books that are not designed to sell monthly books. And there's way too many of those being published right now, that they're only really designed to be gathered in trade, that nobody either expects them to or cares about them, whether they sell books. It's just, we want to get enough issues to throw into a trade paperback. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through solicits now just to see when the next issue is coming out, and either I'm missing it or it's not for a while, so...
Because obviously this came out in April, right? This was still an April release?
Yeah.
Barely.
There it is. Green Lantern Dark number 5 is currently set to come out June 25th.
Which is on time, which is on target, 2 months.
Yeah.
But yeah, you think about it, a 7 issues, it's almost like it's going to be like doomsday clock level of delays, except at least on the plus side for this book, even though the interest level clearly isn't there, that at least it was designed to be a bi-monthly book and to take a long period of time, as opposed to the fiasco that took, like, how long did that take? Did that take like almost over 2 years or something to get 12 issues at a Doomsday Clock?
I'm not sure,
but it was close. We know it was at least a year, but I think it might have been more than a year. We'd have to just look up when Doomsday Clock 1 came out, when the last issue came out. But it's not doing anybody any favors by being bi-monthly, and I think that's it's not an uninteresting story. You are correct. I'm sure it will almost have to read better in a trade paperback. Put it all together and read it. Be able to read it in one sitting if you want. But this is just not really working, I don't think. And overall, it's still somewhat enjoyable. It's not really.
Yeah. The solicit. So just for those of you playing along at home, I think we might like the next issue more. In terms of learning things, with terrors lurking around every corner, the Green Lantern and her band of misfits fend off the dark with campfire stories, their tragic pasts and deeply held secrets revealed as they cut a blazing path through New England, freeing town after town from the evil sorceress's Demona's iron grip.
Yeah, because you would expect that they would be picking up the pace now that we're getting there. So looking at what I just did real quick, for those playing at home, it looks like Doomsday Clock number 1 came out in 11/17. Doomsday Clock number 12 came out 12/19. So it was over a year to get 12 issues in that series, and I'm pretty sure it was never intended to be a bi-monthly book. But nonetheless, let's hope that the story picks up the pace a little bit, because we also don't know what the end game of the story is. We don't know if it was always meant to leave on some pseudo borderline cliffhanger, even if it wasn't a true cliffhanger. But the intent was always to, we're going to have 7 issues and then we're going to come back and do another 7 issues and whatever. Let's hope that that's not really the way it was. But either way, let's just hope they start picking up the pace, and at least wherever we end off in the final issue, it's at least satisfying enough if we're not going to revisit this or not revisit this anytime soon.
Yeah. All right. Moving on,
so let me try to do this relatively quick, because we haven't done this in a while. I'm going to catch up on what I've seen. I no longer know how many of these are in order, but I think they're in order. So I saw A Hell of a Summer, which was the horror movie that Finn Wolfhard was involved in writing and directing. It was okay. I think they revealed the twist in the movie too early. There's two basic formulas with slasher movies. It's either who's doing it to begin with, like a Jason thing or Michael Myers, or it's a mystery. It's like you don't necessarily know who's doing it. So that becomes part of the story. So when you start off not knowing what's going on, and then you kind of give the reveal or the twist too early, it can blow up in your face. And I think that one did. It's a good streaming movie. I'm sure it's on streaming now. So your movie, The Amateur, which I thought was mostly good, a little long. It was a little long, but I thought for the most part it was entertaining. Saw Until Dawn was based on the video game of the same name, which I've never played. The movie as a concept was very good. I think it kind of got bogged down a little in minutia, and I'm not sure if I liked the ending all that much. But if you go to horror movies for kills and gore, then people will absolutely like that. And a movie that you probably won't be seeing anytime soon, I'm going to assume, The Thunderbolts, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Thunderbolts, I enjoyed The Thunderbolts. Thunderbolts is definitely one of the better parts of Phases 4 and 5. It's not perfect, but I'm not saying I liked it just by comparison to what, you know, we know it's a low bar to clear in Phases 4 through 5, but it works. I think it works. It's a little slow in the beginning, but the characters work together. Florence Pugh obviously carries the movie, as one would expect, and she does an excellent job at it. Deals with some deeper issues that most, even if some people will say it deals with them on a superficial level, because that's what a Marvel movie can't do anything but deal with things on a superficial level. Even if you bought into that criticism, it still deals with deeper issues and relatable concepts that I think the audience will enjoy. Corwin and I might do a review on this he watched it, I watched it, Jim might watch it, but I don't know when, just like Chad could watch it. But these are the things that if you're going to, again, strike when the iron is hot. So if we're going to do a Thunderbolts episode, it's probably going to be within the next week and a half or so. And I think that is it.
All right.
So if you want to contact us, lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use GLcast to track, hashtag GLcast, excuse me, to track us down there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.